Right now, what do you say we lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline, talk some Pac-12 and more? Our guest has actually been in town for both Oregon home games, back in the Valley for tomorrow's Oregon State-Stanford game on the network with Roxy Bernstein and Jill Savage. Follow all he's up to, maybe even where he's dining. Use the Twitter handle at Big Ant Heron. Anthony Heron checks in. Anthony, welcome back to Oregon. How's life treating you?
Steve, as spectacular as one could hope for, being here in Corvallis. I've been here a time or two over the years, as you know. It's a lovely little college town. The students have finally started to attend some classes here. This is the campus is alive. I'd say Oregon State football seems to be certainly a better team than they were last year. My sense is that the students are getting that feeling as well.
You know, before we get there, I got to start because you have a huge role. You cover the Bears for the NFL. I caught some of your breakdown on the post game you do live on Fox 32, and the subject was Mitch Trubisky. You know, he struggled in the first game against Green Bay, got the win against Denver, much better at Washington last week. What did you make of his performance in that victory and kind of, Anthony, where he is entering season three?
Quarterback development, Steve, tends to be, as you know, the main topic in any football discussion out there. And for Mitch Trubisky, what ends up being this anchor that's around his perception is the fact that he was in the same draft with Pat Mahomes and with Deshaun Watson. And the Bears, who had the number three overall pick, they traded up to number two, as folks probably remember, and they drafted Trubisky instead of either one of those other guys. Now, you know, I was a Deshaun Watson guy. I thought he was the number one QB in that class, and I told the city of Chicago that leading into that draft, I didn't think Pat Mahomes was going to become this. I'm not sure how many people really could have predicted this level of productivity. And Mitch, at this point, is really going more along kind of the standard, the traditional quarterback development route where you need infrastructure around you. You need playmakers to be able to bail you out at times. You certainly are aided by a run game and by a defense. And in my opinion, that's okay. And I try to remind the city of Chicago of that in a lot of different moments because the Bears have a good enough roster where they can win with Mitch Trubisky as long as their coach, Matt Nagy, calls the game towards the strengths of their current football team and doesn't feel like he needs to immediately make Mitch into Mahomes.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because for folks here who kind of live in the duck bubble might not be aware that Mark Helfrich, while he's got the title of offensive coordinator, you know, he's working for the Bears offense for Coach Nagy. How would you describe what Coach Helf's role is and kind of the impact he's had entering his second season with the Bears?
Well, he gets to do what I believe he does best, what he was great at even at the collegiate level, which is being kind of the mad scientist. You know, he gets to work on the game plan throughout the week. He and Matt Nagy put together how they think the offense will best attack that week's opponent, and then when it comes into the management of the game and the play calling itself, then yeah, like you referenced, that's up to Matt Nagy and doing that. But I really think it's a magnificent role for Mark Helfrich to be in because he's so great with personnel groupings, he's so great with the recognition of situations that you can try to attack opponents in sort of a unique way that maybe they won't be expecting at different points. Now, one of the criticisms I've had of Nagy and Helfrich has been that it's almost like at certain points they try to get a little too clever, where you see all these different personnel groupings, and on third and two, they want to run some kind of a speed option with the quarterback, or on third and one, all right, let's put the number three wide receiver in the backfield and run a toss play with him, and we've got a 220-pound running back who's already rushed for over 100 yards. Maybe you just go the traditional route. So I believe there's a balance to that for Chicago, and that's another one of the things I've reminded Bears fans of, is that while you have Nagy and Helfrich and a lot of the cool, clever stuff they tend to do, they're still in the infancy of their development as well as Nagy as the head coach, Helfrich as an offensive play designer, and he's got their coordinator title. He's not calling the plays like you referenced there, but for them to be able to implement the offensive game plan, I believe right now we've seen it both in the last couple of games with the Bears in week two and week three where we've seen Helfrich and Nagy do a better job of calling the game towards the strengths of the football team and towards the situation as it's indicated in the moment as opposed to just how many times can we drop back and do something cool with the quarterback throwing the football.
Yeah, he's gotten better, 1, 2, and 3. All right, we're in Pac-12 country. Let's go there. I mentioned you've seen a couple of Oregon games, and historically you think Ducks, you think offense from Bilotti, Chip Kelly. But now the defensive coordinator, Andy Avalos, has people talking about them. I mean, you played defensive line in the Big Ten, in the NFL. I mean, you know defense. What's popping to you about how this Oregon team is playing on that side of the ball?
Well, they've gone 3 games in a row without allowing a touchdown. I mean, right now, this Ducks squad, where Mario Cristobal, a few years ago when he showed up with Willie Taggart, and he wasn't even the head coach yet, but he was the co-offensive coordinator, and he immediately started to try to rebuild and revamp the way that Oregon thought of their offensive line play. It wasn't just about, you know, the previous version of the spread that was being run under Chip Kelly and then under Mark Helfrich. That wasn't necessarily requiring offensive linemen to be that physical at the point of attack. They could just operate in two-point stances, create space with various motions and with the way that they'd run that read option, kind of the zone read off the edge there. Now it's a different crew. You know, it's a squad. It's an offensive line that's had more snaps together, more starts together than any other team in major college football. And it shows on the field. Now, they did face a quality Stanford defensive front last week, so it was the first time their run game has been sort of thwarted a bit more this season. But the physicality up front on the O-line, and then Andy Avalos bringing his version of things to defense, where they've been getting bigger and a little more bulky for a number of years now for Oregon on their D-line. But Andy Avalos has tweaked what Jim Leavitt was doing, where from an alignment standpoint, things are fairly similar, but assignment is a little bit different and perhaps a little bit more intricate with how they operate at the second and third level. He's coached it up at a really high level, and I think overall the defense very quickly has turned into one of the more fun to watch in the entire Pac-12.
Absolutely. Talking with Anthony Herron of the Pac-12 Network, he's in the Valley, Oregon State, hosting Stanford tomorrow, 4 o'clock kick. And we grow accustomed to certain programs having staples. Stanford, dominating offensive line, running the ball. They're 1-3. They lost their line anchor, Walker Little, a tackle for the year. Looks like one of their guards, Devery Hamilton, is out. So what's the word on the problems they're having and kind of how out of character this is?
Well, for Stanford, this is really the second year in a row that they've had a bunch of offensive linemen go down via injury. And here this season, I mean, you know, not even a month into the year yet, and they've already lost well over a dozen starts to offensive linemen who they were expecting big contributions from. You mentioned Walker Little. You know, they've even had Foster Sorrell, who was, you know, by a lot of services, the number one offensive tackle in the country when he and Walker Little came to Stanford at the same time 3 seasons back. And even Foster Sorrell has had to miss some time. He may or may not be able to play in the game tomorrow. But what I anticipate, though, is because when you look at the last couple of games, especially last game where Cameron Scarlett was out there running against that tough Oregon defense, he looks really good doing it. I mean, you know, he doesn't necessarily have the top-end speed that we've seen from the last couple of Stanford backs like Bryce Love and Christian McCaffrey before him, but there is a level of physicality that he's been able to show the last couple of weeks. And when you saw him running through tackles of the Oregon Ducks over and over again, that at least allows Stanford to establish the mentality that David Shaw wants them to operate with. Now, he's been working for a couple of seasons, really, Steve, in reshaping, revamping what we think of as Stanford on the offensive side, because while they still want to lead with the ground attack, there's far more balance, far more of a willingness to be able to drop back and throw the ball with volume. And David Shaw really does love the weapons that he has on the outside of wide receiver. They just haven't necessarily been able to feature them in the manner that he would really like. But Osiris St. Brown was one of the top recruits in the country at wide receiver. They anticipate him doing some really big things during his career at Stanford. They just got to find a way to feed him the ball. They haven't been able to do that so much yet. Kobe Parkinson, who had 4 touchdowns in the game they played against Oregon State last season, he's really been the main threat they've had in the passing game this year. And defenses have been able to focus in on Parkinson to make it that much more difficult to try and have that Stanford offensive attack be much of a threat in either manner. But if Stanford can get the run game going, then it sets up everything they'd like to do with the screen game, with the play-action pass to attempts or shot plays, because they really need to get far more explosive on that side of the ball than they have been so far.
Now, as for the Beavs, I mean, you knew Jonathan Smith. Let's face it, he took over a reconstruct, and they had the one FBS win last year. Talking with some colleagues up there, I hear a lot about baby steps. So from what you've observed, you know, they got a great back, some good receivers. It's year two. What would pop as for reasons to be optimistic this is turning around?
Well, Oregon State hasn't won a home game against a Pac-12 opponent since 2016, since the Civil War, when they beat the Ducks back in 2016. I think that was a Willie Taggart year, right? And somehow they continue to lose those games over and over again. But this is the best opportunity I think they've had in quite a while to defeat a major program at home, because it's not the same brand of Stanford football that we're accustomed to seeing. And this is, in Jonathan Smith's second season, a better and improved, a more comfortable and confident Oregon State squad than we've seen in his short time as the head coach here, coming back to his alma mater. The students are back on campus, like I referenced earlier, so there should be some energy in Reser Stadium. They're coming off a huge victory before the last bye week that they had just this last week. You know, week before that, they absolutely dominated Cal Poly. Now, it's Cal Poly, but I went through a coaching change in college at the University of Iowa, from Hayden Fry to Kirk Ferentz. And there's something to be said when you have a new regime come in, there's turnover in the roster, there's a new scheme to learn, body types are changing, and you're trying to figure out whether or not you're really fully invested as a player in what these new guys have brought to the table. And we were talking to some of the players today, like Jake Luton and Isaiah Hodges and, you know, a couple of the defensive stars. And overall, there does seem to be full buy-in at this point. Now, the personnel still isn't going to be something that threatens the other Pac-12 rosters, but they are better, and they've got a wider variety of playmakers than we've seen them have in recent years. So there is most definitely a legitimate shot at Oregon State coming up with a win here against Stanford tomorrow.
A couple final thoughts for Anthony Heron of the Pac-12 Network. Before last Saturday night's UCLA-Wazoo craziness, we had an entertaining game with Colorado winning in Tempe. I mean, if you take away 2016, the Buffs only had 9 total conference wins their other 7 years in the league. But they hired Mel Tucker, who's got an amazing resume as an assistant. National championship at Ohio State, national title at Alabama. They get a road win in the Pac-12. They beat Nebraska. What about the start Coach Tucker has the Buffs off to?
That's one of the underappreciated teams, I think, in the Pac-12 right now this season, because, you know, we know what they had coming back with Steven Montez as a quarterback, but we weren't completely sure what it would look like, because Mike McIntyre had been there for a number of years, and to a certain extent, it seemed like maybe the program had plateaued a bit. I was personally surprised they moved on and decided to make that decision. But you bring in Mel Tucker, another defensive coach, you keep some of the offensive staff in place, and certainly from a personnel standpoint, you've got a quarterback you should be confident in. You've got a lead receiver you should be more than confident in LaVisca Chenault. And so that does give you that experience, that continuity on the offensive side. So it's got a similar vibe to what Arizona State did last year, where you bring in an experienced coach who's been, you know, at the National Football League level, at the collegiate level. And for Mel Tucker to come in and do what he's been doing so far in Colorado, it's been thoroughly impressive. I'm still not completely sure if I think they're a true threat in the South Division to make the championship game, but now that we've seen Utah take a ding, and USC, regardless of who the quarterback's been, they've been able to score some points on folks. So the South Division, that I thought was most definitely going to be Utah's to lose, now feels far more wide open than I think we anticipated coming into the year.
Now, one last thought. I saw you were on Twitter late night Saturday, like, everybody stop what you're doing and tune on in. And I know you've played a lot, you've broadcast a lot, you've watched a lot. I mean, a team scores 42 points in 3 games, then 50 in 19 minutes. Anthony, you ever seen anything like that?
Absolute insanity, Steve. I mean, just indescribable. The closest approximation I can make was just thinking back about 5 years ago, where there was a game where Connor Halliday was dueling for Wazoo State against Cal, when Jared Goff was the Cal quarterback. And Connor Halliday for Wazoo threw for over 700 yards in that game, 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, put 59 points on the board, and lost in regulation. All those things happened in regulation. Somehow Wazoo ends up losing that game. So this felt like the closest approximation I could come up with to that. And Anthony Gordon threw 9 touchdown passes, a Pac-12 record. It was absolutely crazy. But I'll tell you this, and I know actually my crew, myself, Roxy Bernstein, Jill Savage, we're going to be on the call actually next week for the Pac-12 Network when UCLA is hosting Oregon State. So to me, what excites me, the potential for if this Oregon State squad coming off a bye week, if they really do some nice things tomorrow against Stanford and continue to show some growth, then they're going to go and face UCLA the following week. That there's two emerging programs in the Pac-12. Obviously, Chip Kelly, a proven commodity as a head coach, and Jonathan Smith now just starting to set his own resume up as a head coach. So that would really excite me as well, because UCLA, that was potentially a turning point for this program. It wasn't even a full half of quality football that they played, but it was something where when you're in the second year of a program, players can point to it and say there's tangible evidence that what we're being taught, that what we're attempting to do, works. And that's as important as anything when you have that full faith and confidence that what you're being told is the legitimate way for your program to win games.
Folks, he's Anthony Herron, analyst extraordinaire with Roxy and Jill. He'll be at Reaser tomorrow night, Stanford, Oregon State. On Twitter, use the handle at Big Ant Herron. Hey, it's always great catching up. Much appreciate the time. You travel safe. Have a great broadcast and look forward to talking again soon.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Let's do it again soon, buddy.
All right, take it easy.